This is The Political Scene, a weekly conversation with New Yorker writers and editors about politics. It's Thursday, November 8th. I'm Dorothy Wickenden, executive editor of The New Yorker. In the midterm elections on Tuesday, the Democrats took back the House of Representatives. As of January, they'll have broad investigative powers, and a number of committees will be launching inquiries into President Trump's business and political dealings. Yesterday, Trump vowed to adopt a warlike posture in response to any such attempts. A few hours later, he fired Attorney General Jeff Sessions, indicating that he is prepared to go after Special Counsel Robert Mueller. In a conversation with reporters on Tuesday night, Adam Schiff, the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, described how he and his Democratic colleagues intend to proceed.
We're going to look at the work that the GOP obstructed on our committee, and it was really worse than abdicating the responsibility of the committee. The majority went further to be complicit in the president's attacks on the independence of the Justice Department, on the men and women of the FBI, on our intelligence community. So we also need to restore the relationship between our committee and the intelligence community and law enforcement.
Adam Davidson joins me to discuss how House Democrats intend to use their new investigative powers and what the president will do to try to thwart them. Welcome back, Adam.
Hi, Dorothy. Great to be here.
It's a whole new world as of Tuesday. So Democrats didn't take back the Senate, but the victories in the House are really important for all the issues that you've been writing about for the past couple of years, the financial and political misdeeds of the Trump family and the administration. One of the big questions facing Democrats is how aggressively to go after Trump while also showing voters that they can govern, especially given the fact that Congress's approval ratings are at an abysmal 21%. Is there a clear mandate from voters to do this?
I don't think there is. And so I think there's a bit of a, I don't want to call it a civil war, but a robust disagreement within the Democratic Party about how to proceed. There were some polls that suggested it was at least possible that we'd see a thorough rebuke of Trump, that maybe even Democrats would take the Senate. Democrats would take 60 get a majority of 60 House seats. We certainly saw, a strong showing for Democrats and a really pathetic showing for a presidential party with this kind of economy at this kind of moment. You know, a Senate victory of two seats, that is not impressive. But it does not feel, I think, to Democratic leadership like a clear mandate. The gloves are off, go nuts, investigate Trump to the ends of the earth. But there are many Democrats who think, no, we have to do that. And they think that for a variety of reasons. You know, some have just told me very simply, look, we think it's possible that the president of the United States is compromised in some way by one or more foreign governments, and it is our duty to find that out. Others go straight to the politics. You know, when there's bad news about Trump's business, his ratings do go down. They go down in a narrow band. You know, they go from whatever, 43% approval to 39% approval. But as we head into 2020 and the presidential campaign, that is a meaningful band. You'd much rather run against a president at 39 than at 43. Others say, no, the politics would be awful of just going after him obsessively. It's actually arguably Trump's best chance of winning re-election is somehow convincing at least some of the American people that he's an innocent victim, that these Democrats are nuts. They don't want to govern. They don't want to take their role seriously. They just want to go after me and they'll make up everything. It was Russia. Then it was my taxes. Now it's money laundering. Now, we have good reason to think all of those are real issues. The debate is the optics. You know, do you please coastal progressive Democrats, but alienate the rest of the country?
Well, and they're going to have to be incredibly disciplined here to, as you say, to show that they can govern and that they can do that simultaneously while pursuing what they believe to be the most egregious cases of illegal behavior by the administration. So several House committees will have the power to investigate Trump. I think it's, correct me if I'm wrong, intelligence, oversight, ways and means, and judiciary.
Yeah, and I do want to just point one thing out that people may not fully understand. The majority chair of a congressional committee has powers that no other human being in America has, powers that an attorney general doesn't have, that a U.S. attorney doesn't have. The committee chair is empowered to, with no oversight, subpoena anybody and anything, compel testimony from anybody.
Oh, and let me just stop you right there, because this is another point of confusion. How will their work differ from what Special Counsel Mueller is doing?
Special Counsel Mueller, you know, for all his hard-won independence, he is a part of the administration. And in this case, with a lot of handcuffs, a lot of restrictions in what he's allowed to do, and a lot of ability to quash him by the administration. So this is not constitutional oversight. This is kind of an odd quirk that occurs when Congress doesn't do its job. The job of Congress, one of the fundamental jobs of Congress, is to be a co-equal branch of government, providing a serious check and oversight of the administrative branch. And so it is not healthy for our democracy to have sort of the wrongdoing and the investigation of the wrongdoing all happening in one branch of government.
What do you think are the top two or three issues to examine by which committees?
Yeah. So I think intelligence is the number one place, because intelligence wants to know, essentially, did the president of the United States conspire with a foreign government to turn an election? And is the president of the United States compromised? Does Vladimir Putin or Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia or other foreign leaders know something about him or have a financial relationship with him that renders him unable to pursue the interests of the United States over and above his own interests? That's really obviously important. And Adam Schiff back in March wrote a report saying, here are all the questions we have. Here are all the people we want to meet. Here are all the documents we want to subpoena. And the Republicans won't do that.
So give us one of sort of the top things they want to look into.
Well, they want to compel testimony. They feel that Donald Trump Jr., Hope Hicks, Jared Kushner, Corey Lewandowski, they listed dozens of people, either didn't testify at all or did not testify honestly and were not properly challenged by Republicans. They also want to look at a lot of documents. I mean, they want to see the financial records of the Trump Organization. They want to see email traffic and text traffic. They want to know, and we do know Mueller is looking into a lot of this himself, and so perhaps we'll learn about it from him, perhaps. And intelligence is going to be a major piece of theater. I mean, I think of, you remember when Clinton was being impeached and we saw aide after aide sort of on the evening news, you know, being brought before Congress and being questioned aggressively. This is going to, you know.
But again, let's remind people that there was a political backlash that followed those impeachment hearings against Clinton, and they drove up Clinton's approval ratings and also got Newt Gingrich driven from his job as Speaker.
Exactly. That is exactly the fear. The fear is that some people talk about Benghazi. You know, you had every member of the committee with a different theory of the case. No discipline, nothing. Although I will say some other Democratic Party operatives say, you know what, Benghazi hearings? Yes, they were nonsense. They were made up. They were foolish. They got them the presidency. That's how they got access to Hillary's emails. That's how you got both the initial Comey press conference and the later Comey letter that all but certainly threw the election to Donald Trump. So there are some Democrats who say, hey, if they're going to play dirty, we're going to play dirty. And the other thing with intelligence is a counterintelligence investigation is not a criminal investigation. It's an entirely, it's different kinds of prosecutors. It's different kind of investigation. The criminal stuff, I think you start seeing in the judiciary, you start seeing in oversight. And from what I'm hearing from political folks is that's really going to focus sort of on the outer periphery of Trump at first, on cabinet officials. You know, it's an astonishingly, nakedly corrupt cabinet. And there's been far too little oversight. And even given how little oversight, there's already been several cabinet officials who've had to step down in disgrace.
And that is pretty interesting, too, because, you know, Scott Pruitt, his former EPA chief, Carl Icahn, the senior advisor on regulatory issues. Once public disapproval reached a critical mass, they were just jettisoned. And so this is a great, potentially great political issue for Democrats. Trump came into office promising to drain the swamp. What has he done? He's made it far worse.
Exactly. And the feeling that you begin to, you know, eventually the hope of, among Democrats is, you know, you indict or you get to step down enough people in disgrace. Eventually people do start thinking, oh, maybe Trump isn't the great president I think he is. You know, we're also essentially in the first week of the 2020 presidential campaign, and you're going to have, you know, 47 Democrats trying to position themselves to be the presidential candidate. Of course, at least several of them are going to see a way to differentiate themselves is who is the toughest on Trump, who's going to go after him the most. And if that's done in a sloppy way, if there's kind of thin cases that are made, or, you know, if there's a few of those that kind of scandals that erupt and then Trump is found innocent or just found it wasn't really true, you know, that really damages the case. I mean, what the Democrats say is this is an unusual case. There is so much that we already know. We already know because of the New York Times amazing reporting about decades of tax fraud by the Trump Organization. We know that Trump had truly problematic deals with all sorts of very shady characters around the world. We know that there is a very odd relationship between Trump, who openly said during the campaign, the reason I like Saudi Arabia is they give me money, and also his son-in-law and chief advisor or top advisor, Jared Kushner, and Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. I think the sort of slow and steady version of that is, let's not just go out and say, look, these people are totally corrupt, they're evil. It's, let's slowly build that case. Let's get documentation. Let's flip some witnesses. Let's really slowly build that case.
Hi, it's David Remnick. If you're enjoying this podcast, you might enjoy even more of what The New Yorker has to offer. Becoming a subscriber gives you unlimited access to The New Yorker, including Pulitzer Prize-winning reporting, insightful cultural commentary, and fiction and poetry. You'll also enjoy our delightful cartoons, crossword puzzles, narrated stories, and much more. This past year, our readers were gripped by Ronan Farrow's profile of Elon Musk, Heidi Blake's extraordinary tale about Dubai's runaway princesses, and much more. Visit newyorker.com to gain access to all this and more. Use the code POD15, P-O-D-1-5, to secure a 15% discount on a yearly digital subscription. That's POD15 for a 15% discount.
You know, there's a lot of eagerness to see Trump's tax returns. I assume that comes under the purview of the House Ways and Means Committee. What do we want to see there?
The tax returns are seen as the riskiest thing of all. They really are, weirdly. I mean, I would have thought every Democrat in the world would think, like, let's just get them. Like, you know, we'll leak them to the press the very first day we hold the majority in January. But there really is a belief, and the phrase was repeated to me many, many times, that we have to make the case to the American people that, first of all, and that it is necessary to look into Trump's personal business to understand whether he is a compromised president. And then to look into that, we need to see his tax returns. So it's not simply to humiliate the poor guy, but that there is a real purpose. So I spoke to one longtime Democratic staffer, who Phil Schiller, who was chief of staff of the House Oversight Committee. What he hopes is, let's build teams. The Democrats have not done this kind of investigation in decades. We don't have the staff on staff. Let's hire former prosecutors. Let's slowly build it up and really be thinking late February, March, April. Take your time and do it deliberately and pursue the tax returns in the right sequence where it makes sense. Now, I do expect a sort of constitutional crisis and it going to the Supreme Court, his refusal to share his tax returns. You know, we haven't even talked about Trump's response, which I like to point out that every single thing we know about him, all the scandal, has come during a time when Republicans have held a majority of all the investigative bodies and have been open about their lack of interest in pursuing Trump. So we have not really had serious investigation into Trump. We haven't had aggressive investigators. So we are going to learn a lot that we don't know now. The other thing is, Trump in his entire life has never faced a truly powerful opponent who can't be swayed and bribed and cajoled into doing his bidding. And how is he going to respond to that?
We've already seen how he's beginning to respond, which is he fires his attorney general and puts in place Matthew Whitaker, who is now Robert Mueller's boss. And one of the things that drives Trump absolutely insane is, you know, this determination to go after his business, everything that relates to his businesses. And the administration argues that Mueller should be just focused on Russia.
Which is absurd. I mean, what there was no differentiation between Trump's business and the Trump campaign. We know from existing testimony, depositions under oath, that Michael Cohen and Alan Weisselberg, two Trump business employees, facilitated hush payments to Karen McDougal, the Playboy model that Trump had an affair with. In conversation with Trump, Michael Cohen expressed a lot of comfort and familiarity with secretive payments, using shell corporations and other things. We know that Michael Cohen was, during the campaign, actively engaged with Russians to build the Trump Tower Moscow. You know, Donald Trump Jr., who is now the head of the Trump Organization, was responsible for that famous Trump Tower meeting with several Russian operatives, former Soviet Union operatives. So the idea that there's some sphere called the Trump business, and then there's this other sphere called the Trump campaign, and they're so separate that it would be ridiculous to go from one to the other, is simply absurd. It bears no resemblance to reality. There is no way to understand the Trump campaign and the possibility of Trump collusion without a thorough understanding of the Trump business.
And what about since Trump has assumed the presidency? Has there been anything untoward?
There are huge alarm bells. I mean, the most blatant ones is Jared Kushner and his family seeming to have pursued in a variety of ways money from the United Arab Emirates. There's a lot of interest in looking into emoluments. I mean, this fact that the Trump hotels worldwide are doing very poorly. People are not staying in them except for foreign governments renting out lots of rooms at inflated prices, holding conferences, having parties at Trump properties. That's very serious.
And that is unconstitutional.
That is unconstitutional. And not only the Democrats in the House, but several state AGs say they want to look into it. There's also Trump turning his private club Mar-a-Lago into a bizarre sort of shadow cabinet where he just sort of gives as a perk of membership control over the Veterans Administration, ambassadorships, and other things. I would say also among those who cover Trump, there's just a general sense that look, this is a guy who's always wanted money, has never paid attention to rules, to laws, and there's surely more people who want to give him more money today than ever before in human history. And it would be very hard to imagine that in some way or other, Trump is not pursuing those deals. So I think there's a huge there, and I think it's an area where us investigative reporters have not really made the kind of headway we've made in other areas.
Thank you so much, Adam.
Thank you, Dorothy.
Adam Davidson is a staff writer and the author of the weekly Swamp Chronicles column on NewYorker.com. This has been The Political Scene from The New Yorker. You can subscribe to this and other New Yorker podcasts by searching for The New Yorker in your podcast app and find more political analysis and commentary on NewYorker.com. Feel free to rate and review The Political Scene on Apple Podcasts. This program is produced by Alex Barron and Hannah Wilentz for NewYorker.com. I'm Dorothy Wickenden.